I've been attending a group that's talking about how to monetize just connections. That doesn't take any money to go and do that.
You know, you don't have to take a big swing. You don't have to take, you know, $100,000, $1 million and just invest. Just do a small thing.
Welcome to Nursing Real Wealth, where the heartbeat of real estate meets the pulse of financial education. It's my pleasure to introduce our special guest today, Adam Smith, a real estate investor whose journey has been ignited by his dedication to family, financial education, and a thirst for growth. I had the privilege of crossing paths with Adam through our shared mentorship with Pace Morby. A devoted father and a husband and father of three, Adam's unwavering passion for instilling financial literacy in the younger generation is a driving force in his journey. In 2020, he embarked on a real estate journey by venturing into a single family home investment, which was a stepping stone that set his trajectory for success. Since then, he's expanded his portfolio with an impressive four additional properties, showcasing his commitment to learning and evolving in the real estate realm. Adam, it's so good to have you on the inaugural episode of Nursing Real Wealth. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Good to have you. Tell us a little bit about like your background, you know, as far as your work background goes and kind of what led you down the path to pursuing real estate investing.
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey. I started working for the federal government about 20 years ago and was doing a lot of financial analysis. My job took me down the path of learning financial analysis, learning risk management, those types of things. And then I guess it was about 2019, 2020, I started thinking about, well, do I want to continue to do this? And I started to get this itch for something a little bit different. And when I started thinking about it, I was actually talking to a few different people and they led me down the path of the financial independence, retire early movement, and started reading in and listening to different podcasts. And the biggest one was getting into bigger pockets. And I know a lot of people talk about getting into that one and really understanding what is real estate investing? How does it fit into your path? And so I started just going down that path. I mean, again, it's kind of my normal, you know, financial analysis and really understanding those different pieces. So I decided to, like you said, in 2020, I took the plunge and bought my first one. And come to find out, it's not just what's in the numbers, but there's a lot of other things that come along with it. And so my wife and I, we started investing in other properties too and learning along the way and really just getting an idea of how do we generate income from passive investments and how do we make our money, you know, work and for itself. And that's really where we started that path.
I guess the next question is really, you know, what landed you specifically on real estate? I feel like, you know, in my journey, I looked at a lot of different things. You know, I started with looking at stock market and I was like, you know, trying to figure out how you go and invest in the stock market, how you go and time things. I had a friend who really loves the stock market and has a lot of charts and things like that and was teaching me all about that. And I just found it really confusing. What about you? Did you kind of look down that pathway initially when you know, because financial freedom is kind of a big term. It could encompass a lot of different things.
Yeah. And I think that's the biggest thing is just kind of getting an idea of what sparks you. And I did think about stock market. I've got my retirement funds in a lot of stocks. The one thing that I really wanted to do was started to look at how do I replace my current income? How do I generate that kind of income starting now? And real estate's one of the best ways to do it. I mean, you can with the stock market, you don't have any control. You've got to wait for things to get, you know, get higher and move in that direction. You got to wait for something else. With real estate, you can do a lot of different things. you know, you buy in a good area, you got regular appreciation, you've got depreciation that happens. You can force appreciation by rehabbing properties. And so when I started thinking about it, it was like, you can, there's a lot more ways that I can control increasing the wealth that I have and the ways to help my family.
I heard it put this way one time, you know, if you go and own, you know, 100 shares of, say, Google, how many shares of Google do you own? Well, you own 100 shares, period. It doesn't matter how much it costs you. That's it. That's all you own. With a piece of real estate, you could go and put a $20,000 down payment and own a, you know, $200,000 piece of real estate that, you know, fluctuates in its value, but you didn't have to put out the total amount to go and own the amount of real estate you own. So, you know, there's a lot of flexibility in real estate that doesn't exist in other areas. So, yeah, no, that's really good. Who was kind of your mentor, or who taught you finances? Was this a family member, or was this somebody outside of your family? What was kind of the influence there?
So my parents have always been fairly frugal. They always looked for ways to provide a good family of support for myself. And I've got two other brothers, and, you know, we were always fortunate that they always worked to help provide for us. And so I got my basic of education and finance was from them, and to understand, you know, you have a certain amount of income and you can only spend so much. Otherwise you start to, you know, cause yourself some problems. And so that was really the place that really it started, is with them.
Were there any other, informative, you know, individuals in your life that kind of helped you shape, you know, like I would say my parents were excellent with budgeting, but didn't ever think about investing. They were more in line with just saving. We came from poverty, so there was really not much income. So it was just about stretching what you got to go as far as you could, but it wasn't about growing that, income into something additional. Who kind of informed that? Was that also your parents?
You know, my parents did some of that, but most of it really kind of came from, I think, just my normal curiosity. You know, as I went through school, I started to see that there were other ways than just saving. And so really I started to kind of think about it. I did finance when I went through college. And so that mentality's always been there. I've always been looking for ways. How do you use your money to get a return? And so I was always looking for, how do you make the valuable dollars that you have, how do you make them grow in a sound manner, something where you take some risk, but you also mitigate the risk at the same time. So I started really, you know, started talking to a few people, and I've got some friends that got into real estate, and I started talking to them, especially as I got into like the bigger pockets. I jumped into the forums and I started talking to the people there, and I started going to local meetups around here as well. And so you start getting that energy around it, and you start to go, okay, this is what I want to start doing. This to me is fun. And how do you do that? So it really just, it was a curiosity that just continued to turn into finding people that are like-minded, and then to see what they went through and started having those just fun conversations.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said of having community around you when you're trying to go into a territory that a lot of other folks, maybe they don't resonate with it or whatever, or they've never really thought about it. You can meet up with a lot of different types of advice when you're encountering, when you're exploring investing possibilities from friends and dear people. You know, they just may have a different outlook on that than folks who are actively in it and doing it. So that's excellent. From your point of view, what are some of the top three strategies or tactics that you use to manage your money?
Well, I mean, the first one you talked about is a budget. I mean, unless you know what you have coming in and what you're spending on, you really, you don't know what you can do with your money. And I think just setting the groundwork of making sure that you've got a, you know, you understand what is coming in and what you're spending relieves a little bit of tension for you to be able to think about other things. I think the biggest thing is once you kind of figure those things out, you know, thinking about what do you want to do? And that if you're, you know, by yourself, you know, that's just understanding what do you want? How do you want to use your time? You know, if you're with a significant other, you know, having those kinds of conversations, I think is really important. That's where, you know, my wife and I, luckily, both of us agree that, you know, real estate was a place to kind of manage that wealth generating aspect. And then just having a good foundation and learning specific things that you're going to be doing and getting a good feel for those things before you jump into something else. I think, you know, myself, I love to think about all kinds of different things and I try all kinds of different strategies. And I think, you know, listening to people like Brandon Turner talk about learn one thing, do it really well, become really good at that, and then it kind of takes care of itself. And then you can learn something else. There's always the time to learn a little bit of something else after the fact.
That's a good piece of advice. I find myself, I'm a little scattered. I like so many different things in life, you know.
Right there with you.
It's easy to get really, really sidetracked and end up, you know, trying this and I'll try this, you know, there's a, and especially when you're in a mentorship, if they offer lots of different avenues, like Pace Morby's mentorship, mm-hmm. we got wholesaling, you've got private money lending, you've got subject two, you've got create, you know, all these different types of creative finance. You've got even, oh, it's fun. You can go and invest in multifamily. You got all these different options and your mind sort of goes, and you can really get sidetracked and get kind of, what does he call that, shiny object syndrome, where you get really sidetracked and get onto something that really takes you off of what you're maybe starting to formulate a good process for doing. So yeah, that's excellent. If you had an opportunity to go and talk to yourself at, I don't know, 15 years old, what would you tell yourself then, based on what you've learned to date?
Go find somebody and ask them, how do I invest in real estate? And just start from the very beginning learning. I mean, there's so many different strategies. There's so many different ways to get into it. Like you said, just Pace has so many different ways of doing things, but even Pace will say it's not necessarily the only way to do things. He just knows how to really do creative finance really well. But there's so many other ways. But yeah, I would definitely be jumping in from the get-go.
Yeah, yeah. Is there any pathway like that you would recommend somebody take at say 15? They've got their first job. Let's say they kind of struggle to save money. Is there a pathway that you might recommend them to go and take that, you know, would help them to be able to save the kind of money they would need to save so they can start to invest in that future for themselves? Any particular pathways that you would recommend?
I mean, you could think about so many different ones. I guess if I was going to sit there and tell someone who doesn't understand basic finance, go out and just look around in YouTube. Just do some quick Google search, you know, YouTube searches and get an idea of just, hey, what is some basic finance that I need to understand? What does a budget look like? And just start there. Just figure that out first. And then, okay, now that I've kind of got an idea of that, okay, now what's next? You know, what's a bank account? How does a bank work? So it's fascinating what is out there now in YouTube than there was when I was growing up.
Yeah. You know, obviously, Pace has this, mostly hate relationship with Dave Ramsey. I think that Dave Ramsey is a phenomenal starting point. If you need to figure out how to budget, he's honestly where I learned how to go and budget. Just know how much is coming in and to the penny, budget out, including your savings. It's part of your budget. It becomes an expense. Your savings becomes an expense for you. And every cent of what you got paid needs to be spent, but a portion of it needs to be spent on savings. And I love that concept. That's about as far as it goes for me, though, for Dave Ramsey. And I really have to, you know, ignore some of the additional advice that he ends up giving that kind of takes you really just down a traditional path that I don't think really works in this day and age. You start to look at inflation, you know, we're sitting at, if you went and looked at, you know, the wages that an individual made during the peak of the Great Depression, and you look at the wages that we make today, they're not inflation adjusted at all.
No,
we're significantly below what somebody would have made during the peak of the Great Depression. I think what we have different, though, is we have a lot more bad debt to go and make it buy, right? We have a lot of fake money to go and buy the thing that you want. So I think people in the Great Depression probably lived more on cash back then, and that's their only survival tactic, was that they, you know, they didn't get into maybe bad debt. On that note, you know, what from your perspective, how would you categorize good versus bad debt? I think in the real estate investing world, we definitely have some ideas on what's good and what's bad.
Yeah. I mean, I know that's can be a loaded question, honestly.
Yeah.
But you know, when you think about, good versus bad, the way that I look at it is, what am I spending it on, and what is it for? And so if I'm going to do a mortgage, that's traditionally what people think about is good debt. It's not necessarily bad to take a mortgage out, but you need to know, what is your payment? How much is that going to stretch you with other things? Is it going to force you into bad debt, credit cards, debt consolidation loans, even home equity loans? Sometimes people talk about that's easy enough. Well, they're using that debt to go finance their vacation or their boat, or things that, you know, ultimately are draining your account. They're not getting you good things. When it comes to real estate, you know, you think about debt. If you think about it smart, you're going to buy a property. Hopefully it will cash flow. That's what I always look for. I know some people look at appreciation, but I look at cash flow, because as long as it cash flows, it will continue to pay the mortgage. Somebody else is going to pay it down. And that to me is good debt, because you're using it in the fashion that it's meant to be used, not to go and, buy the nicest, brand new car, and go to the, a nice all-inclusive resort or something like that. With that, if you don't have the money, do something.
Taking your family to Disneyland, just put it on the house tab, the home equity line.
Yes,
yeah, bad idea. I don't know if Disney would roll over in his grave or not. He might like the fact that you spend the money on it, but who knows, right? All righty, and then what tools do you like to use to go and manage your finances? Obviously we've talked about a budget. Is there a specific kind of way you like to structure that, or what?
Yeah. So I've got a couple of programs that I use that automatically feeds in from different accounts that I have. So I use, I know there's different ones out there. People talk about like Mint, and there's Personal Capital is out there. I know that's a big one. I think Empower just bought them. Right now they're using them. But a way for me to kind of automatically pull in the transactions and to categorize, what am I spending on? Where are those things at? That's really probably my biggest tool that I use. And then from a real estate side, I mean, there are similar tools that are out there as well, just to kind of make my make it easier than having to just use a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's still not that bad to use a spreadsheet too. I mean, that's you can use that as well.
Yeah. Yep. I know for my personal side of things, I still use a spreadsheet, which I know it feels a little archaic, but it's kind of nice because I put it in there, and you know, as I add an expense to a category, it zeros it out, and then it's like, nope, you're not spending anything else on that category this month. We're gonna cap that off, and then we'll prioritize our expenses from that perspective. I know for my real estate, I just basically track the ins and outs of it through QuickBooks. That's my primary method right at the moment. But yeah, what do you use primarily for your real estate tracking? You have some short-term rentals, right?
Yeah, we use the same software. I mean, Stessa's out there. It's one that's available out there. We've talked about moving over to QuickBooks, and we may end up doing that just because we're talking about the possibility of getting a bookkeeper to help kind of take care of that, because there's a little bit more that's going on, and I got other things that I would like to get into.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep. If you were to recommend any books or formative podcasts that you like to listen to, what are a few that you would recommend?
I mean, just recently I got in and read Rocket Fuel. That is a fantastic book. I mean, it gives you an idea of where you're at with structuring an organization. You know, as you grow, you know, a lot of people are not going to be able to do it all by themselves. And so you have to understand how do you work? Are you kind of the visionary, you know, the person who kind of thinks about things? Are you the integrator who can kind of work and develop the systems and the processes? Those two got to work together. And that book's really good about doing that. When it comes to podcasts, I mean, I started with Choose FI. Bigger Pockets was another one that was a big one. And then Coach Carson, I think his podcast, I think, rings really true to me. He talks about kind of that small and mighty investor. And I think that's kind of where I'm at too, because I think about, you know, I want to grow and I want to provide for my family. But at some point, that probably is enough for me. It allows me to do other things. And I think it's a fantastic podcast to just think about and have him just kind of break little things down and why he's done what he's done. And I really like to listen to that one.
What was the name of that one again?
Coach Carson.
Coach Carson. Awesome. I will say this, you know, when I listen to a lot of real estate investors, you often hear the good stories, right? So you hear what went really well. You hear how amazing this deal was. I appreciate the fact that Pace has expressed a number of times what he's lost in real estate, which happens sometimes. Not very often, but it happens sometimes when you run a deal maybe the wrong way or whatever. What successes or failures have you experienced in your journey? And then, you know, what lessons would you say you kind of learned from there? What was your sort of your pivot point from those circumstances? Any?
I would say probably the worst one that's happened to me so far, and I'll say so far because it's going to happen again, or something's going to happen like that again. We got into a deal, and the rehab was going to be pretty extensive to begin with. We kind of budgeted out a certain amount, and as we got in farther and farther, as we started, open up a little wall, and then you notice, well, that outside wall, it's about to fall in. And so just we basically got to the point where we ended up actually doubling our rehab costs. I was hoping that when I refinanced, I'd get a little bit of money back out, and I ended up having to put a little bit of money into the deal to keep it afloat. It's one that I still have on on the books. I'm still holding on to because, you know, it still looks like it'll cash flow, but I'm kind of, that's one that I kind of keep looking at, like, okay, is it one that might need to go at some point? I think that's, you just learn so much from, you know, you think are failures, but it's really just learning on the job.
What would you say from that one? Was that primarily because of the rehab budget, or was it also a mix of like change in you know, the market value of it? Anything like that? What kind of was the main driver there, do you think?
I would say the rehab budget was probably too low. We should have probably known that it was going to be at least a little bit more expensive, putting in a little bit more contingencies into it. You know, you can always have too much, but sometimes that makes the deal. You do the deal if you budget too much on that. So I think for us, it was just we didn't budget enough, and I don't think that I talked to the contractor well enough prior to get the scope of work. I think he knew something was going to happen, but he didn't. We just didn't talk about it and kind of went into it, unfortunately, until you're actually in it and pulling, like I said, pulling those walls down. You don't know sometimes what's behind those walls.
So to a new fix and flipper, you'd recommend at least, you know, pump those budgets up a little bit higher, and make sure that you're really covering your bases when it comes to budget, your projections there.
Yeah. If you get a contractor out there, add, you know, 15-20% at least, just to kind of get yourself, okay, do you feel comfortable with that number?
So don't just rely on your wholesaler's projection of what your renovation cost is going to be. It's a great deal.
It always is.
It's a great deal. Yeah. What do you say your trajectory is looking like over the next 5 years? What would you say you're looking to, your course of action in real estate, or your primary investment strategies that you're kind of looking at?
Yeah, so I think we're going to be looking probably at some small multifamilies, trying to get in there. I'd really like the idea of the creative finance. Pace Morby's got, you know, the sub two and the all the creative finance strategies that are out there. Just listening to those to people talk about that in the mentorship has really opened my eyes to that. There's not just one way to make a deal work. There's a lot of different ways. So I think small multifamilies. We're probably going to look at some midterm rentals too, because those are have been pretty good for us at this point. And then, you know, at some point, I really would like to become more of a lender, private money lender, you know, help especially those that are getting just started in the business, help them along kind of the way I've had some people who've helped me as well do that.
When you talk private money lending, are you looking for you know, the EMD lending that Pace often kind of talks about in Gator, or are you also looking at doing a lot more like the gap funding and stuff like that?
Yeah. So I think at this point I'm starting to see there's a lot of opportunity for the gap lending. I think there's a lot of space to take that kind of stuff on, because our money, other private money lenders, they want that first lien position. You know, if you're willing to take a second lien, I mean, you can get a little bit more return because you're going to take more risk. And so just finding smart ways to mitigate your risk is a big, it gives you an opportunity, because there are some really good people out there and they know how to do the work and they know how to make a deal work, but they may just not have the financing to be able to make the deal work. And so, you know, you have a lead until you have, until you have money, and then it becomes a deal. The people talk about.
I know in previous conversations, you and I have talked about your desire and your kind of passion to help youth with financial literacy, and potentially even developing some course material or something along those lines to help engage with youth that are interested in this to get them started on the right trajectory, because we really don't have great education in that realm, especially in our public schools. That's basically completely missed. There's no financial intelligence taught in public school. Even private school may miss that. So, you know, tell us a little bit about that journey, what you're kind of looking to maybe do.
Yeah. So I'm glad to bring it up. I mean, that is the piece that real estate is hoping to unlock for me. So as you know, as I look at what I was taught coming through and talking to other individuals, especially as you got into college, I mean, they just didn't know, they didn't have the basics of finance. I mean, they just thought, I get a paycheck and then I just pay off my credit card. Well, they just made the minimum payment. They didn't understand what that looked like. And so it's not difficult to understand the concepts that are there, but it's just finding ways to break those things down into smaller chunks. Learn, there's a vast world of finance and you can get into a lot of crazy things, but really getting people who don't have that education, getting it to them so that they can understand, okay, my paycheck comes in and these are the things that I need to pay for and these are the things that I'd like to do. Okay, how do I budget? How do I make that work? And then slowly build on that as they go through so that they don't get themselves in a situation where they've got credit card debt that they can't make payments on, or a car payment that they can't make a payment on, or they get too much of a mortgage that they can't make. I just don't want to see people go into bankruptcy. There's unfortunately people who are looking for people who are in financial distress and they take advantage of them. And I don't want them to get there. You know, you think about yourself going to a doctor. You know, you can wait for the doctor to tell you you've had a heart attack, or you can start to do the things from the very beginning. You know, just go to the gym, go take a walk, eat healthier. Financial literacy is the way for people to eat healthier and to start to exercise and start to build the momentum that they can be in a healthy position with their finances.
That's actually a very interesting parallel. I'm a nurse, so as a nurse, you know, I always think about preventative, and we really don't do a great job of preventative education. You know, we'll tell people to do a little bit of exercise for their general health and well-being, but in general, in healthcare, we sometimes miss the opportunity. You know, insurance companies, they don't go and pay for somebody to go to the gym. That would be true preventative care, right? You know, to actually pay for somebody to have a gym membership, to go and take care of themselves preventatively, that would be a great opportunity for them. I think we kind of miss that on both fronts. We don't teach great financial education. We don't teach great health education up on the front end of things. So that's really important. Well, thank you so much for sharing. Any last thoughts, anything you want to go and share with folks, just kind of who might be listening? This might go out to an audience that has never thought about this at all. Mm-hmm. This would be the first time they're hearing a concept of, you know, some actual strategies for investing. I mean, we've all heard the term investing. Mm-hmm. Sometimes to some folks, that's going to be a bit of a big, scary thought. Like, I have no idea where to begin. Yeah. But to the person who's just now like, I wonder if I should do some investing. What would be your kind of your last bit of advice or recommendation to them?
I think taking action. You know, you don't have to take a big swing. You don't have to take, you know, $100,000, $1 million and just invest. Just do a small thing. Like you said earlier, you were talking about getting into the stock market. You can open up an account and, you know, throw a dollar in there in a week and just watch it kind of go for, you know, a couple of months and just get used to doing something. You can always reverse course if you start small. But if you start, that's where you learn. And I think that is the biggest thing for all types of investing. Don't throw everything at it. Start small take action, learn as you're going, and then continue to build on your strategy. Maybe that's not the way you want to go. You know, you may not want to go and just do stock market. Maybe you want to do real estate. Maybe you want to buy a business. I mean, there's all kinds of different ways to invest, and just by getting in, taking action, gives you the most experience you can. It might hurt. There might be some ramifications, but you know, and otherwise you just sit on the sidelines, and unfortunately you just don't learn.
Actually, you know, I've been attending a group that's talking about how to monetize just connections in real estate, just connecting two people that need to meet, you know, being that facilitator and being able to make a little bit of money in the middle. I met a young guy who isn't part of any mentorship programs whatsoever, 19 years old, full of energy. And he is just out there like on these real estate groups going and connecting and finding people. Oh, you need money? I know this guy over here who needs money. And he's trying to connect those two pieces so he can make a little bit of money in the middle. And that doesn't take any money to go and do that.
It doesn't.
It just takes a little bit of time. And he's 19 years old and has an abundance of time. So instead of spending it out, you know, being a goofball with his friends, he's out hustling it in his house and making connections and talking with people like all day long. So
That's awesome.
Kudos to him. I mean, he's taking some action.
Yeah,
he's
going to
try and build himself a little nest egg while he's still living with his parents, and getting started and learning the lingo early for real estate. He'll be in a great position in like 5 years to go and go full time into real estate. So just from taking some action and learning what he can for free on YouTube. There's a ton of information.
Oh my gosh.
If you don't know where to find free good information, you need to look at bigger podcasts, bigger pockets. Their podcast is just full of good information, like Adam's mentioned. And then the other place you can go is go to Pace Morby. Pace Morby drops hours worth of incredible free information that will light your mind afire with opportunities you didn't realize existed. As we conclude this insightful conversation on the inaugural episode of Nursing Real Wealth, I'd like to extend our sincere gratitude to Adam Smith. Adam, thank you for sharing your journey, insights, and passion for financial education and real estate investing. To our viewers, thank you for joining us today. Your support and engagement mean the world to us. We're committed to bringing you valuable discussions like this one, aimed at empowering your journey toward financial freedom and real estate success. Thank you again, Adam, and to our wonderful audience. Take care, and we look forward to having you with us on the next episode of Nursing Real Wealth.